W. from San Diego.
Woo! I'm Alan, I'm an alcoholic. And I know some of you are waiting for me to fall, aren't you? I'm a member of this group. I've been coming here since the first speaker. We didn't get to hear the first speaker, but we've been coming ever since because we heard he was good. Tonight he's speaking across town, and the reason I'm mentioning that now is that it's too late for you to get there. He's speaking at South Bay Pioneers on the occasion of his 44th birthday. However, his time doesn't really count because he's a member of the 1st Marine Division, and God knows they don't count at all. Oh, sorry, George. I've got no business being here today. If anybody deserved to be here, it'd be Bob over there. Sure as hell wouldn't be me. Because I've done nothing to really deserve being sober. I'm one of those kinds of guys that got to Alcoholics Anonymous, not by accident. You'll hear from my story that there's no accident, but I'm damn lucky to survive just long enough to be here. If you heard, is last week's 10-minute speaker here? I figured you would be. If you heard him, he said in 8.5 minutes, what I'm going to stumble through nearly 40 minutes to try to accomplish. And he did it, and he's got 3 years sobriety. So much for long-term sobriety, for God's sake. You know, I'm not that good. I'm that tall, but I'm not that good. I lived in a family that we had things happen in our family that you did not, in the 50s, go out and tell people about. You just kept it to yourself, and you... It was a rough way to go. It was violent. It was something you didn't... Well, put it this way, without going into details, and I don't blame this on my alcoholism, there were a lot of times where I ditched Jim just so the bruises wouldn't show. And if you know what that's about, if you've ever been there, you know exactly what that's about. Lots of things happened in our family that just wasn't like everybody else. There was a big difference between the way I felt in church and the way everybody else was in church. In other words, the way I was on the inside and the way you were on the outside was different. I broke all the rules. I have to laugh. I'm a failed Methodist. I hate to use that term, failed, but I happen to know that there's a couple failed Catholics sitting in here too. And maybe a failed Baptist or two. In other words, I knew right from wrong. I just didn't do it that way. That's not the way it turned out. I will tell you, though, that when I first found alcohol, ethyl alcohol, I was 11. And on that occasion, I found heaven. It was absolute bliss. My dad was on his way to Europe. My mother was taking him to the airport, and I found the gin. I thought I was cute. My mother didn't think that was cute at all. But I had absolute peace for the first time in my life. Once my dad was out of town, that was great, and that gin did the rest. Now, I'm a little different than most of the speakers you hear, or at least that I heard when I got here. Except for maybe Al over there, who's wacky enough to... I'm a periodic alcoholic. You don't hear us a lot. We're not speakers a lot. You hear guys who were full-fledged alcoholics. Guys who learned to drink during the Depression. Sorry, Bob. guys that were full-tilt drunks. They drank every day. They were maintenance drinker. They got sober once or twice. And then life was wonderful. That's what you hear. And that's what I heard when I got here. Periodic alcoholics, though, are a little different. We get sober over and over and over and over and over and over again. We don't know when the next one's going to happen, but we know we're going to get drunk. We know it's going to happen. That's the difference between them and me. Because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't dare hope that this could be true for me. This deal that I could see, and if you can't see that in here, you're blind or you're not ready, one of the two. But I could see the gleams in your eyes. I could see the twinkles. And God, you got some lovely twinkles in this group. And yes, I'm looking at the twinkles. We've got some lovely other things in this group, too. What are you laughing at, Al? This is the guy that volunteered to be the first hugger the group ever had. And some of those guys that got hugs were damn glad to get them. I couldn't make too much of a joke of my early drinking. It's serious enough that, let me tell you, I could say it best this way. I'm under threat up here, by the way. The guy who asked me to speak got me just before the meeting and told me that if I wasn't any good, that, you know that scene in Frankenstein where all the people with their pitchforks and that's what I'm envisioning. And he's standing back there by the door, so I can't really make a run for it, you know. So if I'm not any good, you'll have to shield me and help me out. But I can't even say I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here because of a small, fanatic group of people. You don't hear very much of. You hear them in this meeting, and I'm so glad that you do. It's the Hospital and Institution Committee. Now, that sounds benign, doesn't it? How many members of the Hospital and Institution Committee here today? Now, these are the fanatics that sit by the door so that you can't get out. They're the ones that go to hospitals and institutions, deliver a message you can't get anywhere else. Because guys like me aren't going to come here to get that message. And let me tell you why I got to where I got that message. Are there any Al-Anons in here today? It figures. It's Saturday night. Why aren't you at bingo? I'm glad you're here. And I love you. And I got to say that. I'm here as a result of the fact that you loved me and you didn't give up on me. Many did give up on me. Because I found my solution, and I have to keep reminding myself every time I speak and every time I think about how lucky I am to be here. I found my solution. In September 1973, oh, by the way, I know it's the custom to do this too. My sobriety date is October 1st, 1973. My home group is the Sunday Midday Group, the best group in San Diego. And just in case I didn't say this, all three 30-year members of my group are here to make damn sure I did. They don't exactly have clipboards, but they have good memories. And we do meet tomorrow. So if I really bomb for the group here tonight, I'm going to get it tomorrow, too. Camille's one of them, by the way. I'm the second one of our group speakers to speak here, and I'm glad I was asked. And I thank you, Terry, for asking me. Terry may have to run by the time I'm done. I found the solution to my drinking and living problem in September of 1973 because I didn't want to see that look in anybody else's face. When you get sober over and over and over and over and over again and you don't know when that thing is going to happen, you know that look. And if you're like me, you've seen that look early. I saw it in my early 20s, and I can remember the first time I saw that look to be able to recognize it. In other words, my eyes were open so I could see it. You always see it backwards. You say, you can see that dead look in a newcomer's eyes. And if you're just coming to an Echo Park in Los Angeles and you've had a bad weekend and it's Sunday and you realize that there's a church group meets across the park and they walk through the park and they're pretty. They're good-looking people. And that woman looked down at me and I was just slipping my shoes back on and she said out loud to her friend, "How does a kid like that get in a position like that?" And there was no answer then. And I don't suppose there's an answer now to that question that she asked. But that look in her eye, I was to see that all of my drinking career. And that September of 1973, I was tired of seeing that look. I had just been kicked out of the house by that woman with a pre-Al-Anon stance. If you don't know what that is, let me demonstrate. By the way, I apologize in advance, Al-Anon lady back there. It's this. The body language is, you're going to get it. And she taps her foot as she says, listen, you son of a bitch, and then delivers the message. That day the message was, don't come home anymore. We're tired of looking at you like that. I don't want you around the kids in that condition. We don't know what you're going to do next. It's over. And that woman only had one over. That was it. And out I went, and I lost my whole family, kids and all. I got a 2-year-old kid at the time. And I found my solution that day. My solution, just like the 10-minute speaker last week, was to end my miserable life. That's what I could come up with by myself. I hadn't heard your message yet, and that's the one I came up with. That I didn't want to live anymore, and I didn't want to live that way anymore, and I wasn't going to put up with it anymore, and I was going to check out. That was my intention. That was my intention. When you're kicked out of the last big house, and you can't see your kids anymore, and you know you're the one that screwed it up. I didn't know it was alcoholism. I just knew I'd screwed it up again, and I never meant to do it. How many Christmases in a row do you have to lie drunk sitting under the Christmas tree looking up at the angel wondering what the hell happened? And spend Christmas afternoon with a screwdriver and pliers and try to put those toys together. And it just never, it was over. I wanted to check out. Now, that is a 100% successful program. I've seen it. I've seen it in others. You check out that way, you don't have to worry about tomorrow. Or whether you take the steps or not, or getting a sponsor, or any of that really heavy stuff. And the reason that I didn't check out, I made 3 attempts, and I'm not proud of this. I made 3 attempts in 1973 to do just that. They were good enough attempts. I got my attention, that's for damn sure. When I left the house that day after she gave me the Al-Anon stance, or pre-Al-Anon stance, sorry. I needed a drink. I needed to think. I needed a space. And I went to the one place. I wasn't in the habit of going to the Elks Club. I am not an elk. I don't see anything funny about that. But the Elks Club had a bar. So I went to the bar, and I was visibly shaken. And the guy behind the bar looked at me and says, kid, you look terrible. What's the matter? For some reason, I got a dose of the truth. I don't know what made me say it. I just told this guy in the shortest sentence I could, life sucks. I want to die. Give me a drink. And I think he did give me a drink. But the son of a bitch didn't play fair. These liars, cheats, and thieves don't wear signs that tell you they're liars, cheats, and thieves. He knew about another type of club that he thought maybe I would fit in a little better. It was called the Alano Club, and I'm glad he didn't tell me it was Alano. Not that it would have mattered. I learned a lot of new words that day. So he had somebody drive me to the Alano Club. Let me describe the Alano Club to you. This is in San Mateo, California. You go up to the Alano Club, it's upstairs. Just as you get to the top stairs, there's a little plaque that says only 12 more steps to go, as if that made any sense. I sat down at the bar, and this guy, this 300-pounder, was standing there cooking breakfast for others. And it was cheap. Like breakfast is $1 or something like that. And I was impressed. I'd only had one drink. I could maybe get an egg down or two. And he made me an egg, and he came over, and he talked to me the same way that damn bartender did. He says, kid, you look terrible. You look like you need detox. Second new word. Detox. But if you're a newcomer and you really don't want to make it, let me warn you. Ask about these new words that you're hearing. And he says, look, I'm getting off work here in a few minutes, and I'll take you down to detox. He says, have you got any money? I said, I got about $40 left. He said, do you have any cigarettes? I said, no, I've got maybe two left. He says, I'll stop by. I'll drop you at detox. Stop by and get you cigarettes so that you'll have cigarettes up there. Sounds like a good plan. But liars, cheats, and thieves do not wear tags. He took my $40 and I didn't see him again for 5 years. And when I did see him again, he was a newcomer in AA and I couldn't afford to be mad at him. He drove me to detox in a car that's just kind of beyond description. I'll try. If you sat in the passenger seat and looked straight down through your legs, you could see the road. The smoke came up through there, so you had to have the windows open. And he was an incessant talker. He talked about how wonderful life is in Alcoholics Anonymous, how great this is going to be. He kind of envied me that this was the first day of the rest of my life, and I wanted to... That's San Francisco language. I don't know if you're Italian or not. If you are, I apologize, because you probably know what that means. Anyhow, he dropped me off a detox and stuck me with this 86-pound giant of a man named Jerry. And Jerry was an Alcoholics Anonymous member and knew how to talk to drunks. And he worked in the county detox. He says, hey, bub, or hey, kid, something nasty like that. What's the problem? And I told him I wanted to die. I don't want to live anymore. This sucked. I can't do anything right. And even if I do try the hardest I can to do it right, it turns out wrong. And he says, I understand. I've been there too. He says, look, why don't you lay down? Maybe things will look different in the morning for you. And it didn't matter to me whether they did or didn't. My resolve was 100%. I was going to check out. And this detox thing sounded like it would hurt. And if you want to die, something going to hurt first isn't going to hurt, you know. So I laid there and I shook it out for that night and wished I had a cigarette. I know we're not supposed to have resentments, but come on, 34 years, you know. I woke up the next morning and a miracle happened, and it did. It was a miracle. On one side of me was a guy who had tried to steal an airplane two nights before, out at Half Moon Bay, California. The only problem was he was so drunk he forgot to untether the plane. And the county sheriff didn't have very much trouble getting him out of the plane and in a detox. And he told me there was a 72-hour hold on him. See, there's two ways to do this. You can go into detox with or without a 72-hour hold. I think it's the same down here. But he had a 72-hour hold, and as far as I knew, I didn't. It's a good thing. Because the guy on the other side, I don't know what his real name is. He had a nickname, and that's all they ever called him back there. His name was Popeye, and he had the record of being in detox. He'd been in Crystal Springs detox over 300 times. That's what happens when you can time your drunks between the checks. And if you run out of alcohol before the checks do, then you hang out in detox. And his 72 hours were over, and he told me what a terrible place I had landed in. And he told me the truth. He said, this is a god-awful place. They don't give you any formaldehyde here. They're going to feed you slop and feed you that AA BS. Do you want to come with me? I got a cab coming, and I went with him. Now, if that day had been successful and that program had been successful, I wouldn't be here today. Because we went down behind the Safeway store, and Popeye went in to get whatever it took to make him well, I'll never know. Because by the time Popeye came back out with a bag in his hand, the police cruiser, passed the Dempsey dumpster, stopped and said, "Hey, Popeye, how you doing? Who's the kid?" And Popeye said, "Somebody I met at detox." And the cop didn't have any sense of humor at all. And he put me in the squad car and drove me back to that tyrant, Jerry T. Remember I told you he weighed 86 pounds, a little slight man. By the time I got back, he was an ogre. He had a crooked finger. I've had two crooked fingers wagged at me in my entire life. One was my third grade teacher. And she would point at me, and somebody over there had to react. And Jerry had that crooked finger too. And he was no more than Mr. Nice Guy. He said, "Listen, you son of a bitch," everybody wanted to talk to me like that. He said, "You get back in that bed and you stay there." 86 pounds. And I was scared to death of him. And I got back in that bed and I stayed there. I stayed there until the next... Are there any nurses here tonight? Oh, okay. See me after the meeting. They sent a nurse down with an aluminum clipboard and a list of the stupidest questions you've ever heard in your life, among which are, "Do you drink?" And then she said, "Are you on any medications at all?" I said, "Yeah, I'm on Benadryl for hives, and I'm on that. What's that stuff that it won't allow you to drink?" "How come so many of you know that?" And she put the aluminum clipboard down and she said, "You're not supposed to drink with antabuse." And I had a nasty name for her that most nurses probably don't deserve. And she wagged her head a little bit and she took off. And 2 days later, they sent another lady down with an aluminum clipboard. She had a different job in that institution. She was a social worker. She asked me what I thought my problem was, and I was still stuck on that truth crap. And I told her, I said, "I'm nuts. I'm absolutely crazy. I can't stop. I can't quit. Even when I do quit, I start again and I never know." And that's the truth. I never knew. Today, I could give you the time. Give me that same set of circumstances, and I can guarantee you, by noon, I'm going to be drunk. But back then, I didn't have a clue. She said, "You've got options." There was a church group that was picking up drunks around San Francisco. We heard from them later something about Kool-Aid. And they had a treatment program. There was the Veterans Administration. They had two programs. One at Menlo Park, very successful program. To this day, it's very successful. One at Palo Alto. Those were available to me. The county had a hospital, and that was available to me. And they had an ARU program. Doesn't that sound like it would hurt? ARU program? Right where I was, attached to that detox thing. And what did I think I wanted to do? And I told this lady the truth. I want to die. I don't want to do anything, because whatever I do, it's not going to matter. I'm never going to get sober. I'm never going to get my family back, and I want to die. And I told this lady the truth. She packed up that aluminum clipboard, and they gave me the opportunity to go up and interview. Now, if you're a newcomer, don't ever do that if you want to get sober. There are some mistakes you can make around here. For God's sake, at least ask what that interview crap is. Don't just blindly go in there and answer their questions. I did. They put about 100 people around me, and they all fired questions about me and my drinking and my life. And I answered them all to the best of my ability that day. And they unanimously voted me into the nut house. I was at that point a member of the ARU program at Crystal Springs. Now, there are some good things and bad things in nut houses. There's very little laughter. So the laughter comes later in AA. After all, if you're standing here looking out at the people I'm looking at, there's plenty to laugh at. Sorry, Al. No. But at the point, there's not much laughter up there. So I went into that ARU program, and I did what they asked me to do. I pounded out wallets. I made coffee cups. I learned to use the kiln, only with supervision. I've yet to figure out what the hell I could have done with a kiln to hurt anyone, but they knew, and that's the important part. And then they changed their damn rule. Where's Kelly? She's still here? Oh, yeah, it figures. Here's the rule they changed. Right up till I was there 2 months, AA conflicted with our therapy there at the Nut House. And I was glad. I had tried AA before. I went to those meetings. I read those signs in my 10-second attention span. You know, think, 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 my favorite. And those over here. You know, and it just didn't work for me. And I heard everybody speak, just like I hear them here, only I hear differently when I hear speakers from here today. Back then, it sounded very much like, "Hi, my name's Paul. I got 50 billion years of sobriety. If you want what I have, you're going to have to call for it, kid." I know that's not what was said, but that's how it sounded to me. And I knew this Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't going to work for me. I knew it. But the rule they changed, they let that crazed group of fanatics from the hospital and institution into the outfit. You know, how I found that out was that I was laying on our little squad bay early one evening watching Mission Impossible. That tells you how long I've been sober, huh? And this woman comes through the squad bay doors. She was gorgeous. She had large mammary glands. Oh, God, she was gorgeous. And I only say it that way because my sponsor wouldn't let me say tits anymore. And what she said was, "Downstairs we've got an H&I meeting, and we've got cigarettes, and we've got cookies. Anybody wanting to go, come down." She had me at cookies. Oh, hell, she had me at mammary glands. No, we didn't laugh much in the Nut House, but we sure knew an attraction when we saw her. The lady took us down there, and we sat us in that room, and she tricked you. These liars, cheats, and thieves don't wear signs. We sat in that room, and she was right on some things. There was cigarettes. That's back when you could smoke in those places. And there was cookies. And there was an old bat of a woman sitting at the head of the table named Juanita. She had been sober 5 years. She was not attractive. She was ugly. And how was I supposed to know that I was going to get stuck with her? I didn't know there was any rules. I didn't know this, the guys work with the guys and the girls work with the girls. Now you tell me. After the fact. And the gal with the large mammary glands disappears. I'm hanging around till she comes back. It's one of the promises, damn it. And I'm hanging in here. Juanita told me the stories that was her drunk along. She told me the story about throwing a brick at her husband, missing him, and bashing the windshield out on the DeSoto. About burning down the chicken coop, and even when she came to Alcoholics Anonymous, had to wait to find out how many years she had to wait before she could not be prosecuted for arson. She told this terrible story about a drunk woman's life. And ironically, she did that during my 10-second attention span. My mind opened up just in time for her to talk about a degree of loneliness that you can't describe to anybody else. Damn! That wasn't supposed to get out. She talked about life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then she absolutely changed. Everything about her changed. Everything about her. She wasn't dumpy and rumpy anymore. She was twinkling. She twinkled all over. She talked about going to AA dances, and the young men would dance with her. Now, I don't consider that one of the promises. If I start going to AA dances, please don't ask me to dance, you guys. But it was a big deal for her. And she twinkled all over, although some parts of her story was absolutely terrible. Some parts of her story was a nightmare, for instance. Somebody had slipped her son some LSD up in Lake Tahoe, and he slipped into under the water, and they didn't find him for weeks. They knew he was under there. They just couldn't get him. Lake Tahoe's a very deep lake. It took 6-8 weeks for them to find the body. And that mother had to sit in AA meetings for weeks, hurting. To the point where words cannot take that kind of pain away. It doesn't work. Sometimes I forget that. I think words should be able to do that. They don't. You don't take a mother who's waiting for the worst news of her life and then try to talk her back into smiling. You can't do that. And I didn't know I was even going to need that. That's a terrible piece of her story. But yet, she talked about her 5 years in old timer, 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she talked about how her life had turned around. Some of her kids still wouldn't talk to her. They still hadn't found her son at that point. But life was worth living for her. And you know what? My plan just wasn't that viable anymore. After that moment, my plan had a hole in it. It wasn't going to be 100% successful, just like I thought it was going to be. She didn't play fair either. Liar, cheat, and thieves don't wear signs. She gave me some advice, and it sounded, I wanted that twinkle. You know, all my life I've looked for something I couldn't put my finger on. But the minute I saw that twinkle, I wanted that for me. I wanted it so bad I could taste it. And I was sure that it could never be for me. I was sure of that. I had tried it over and over and over and over. There had to be some kind of change for that to be true for me. But I wanted it. It was the first time in my life I wanted it. So she gave me some instructions. She was the only member of the hospital and institution committee. She handled that entire institution by herself. She was there every Wednesday night. She told me to obtain a big book, find a sponsor, and get a home group. Best three pieces of advice I've ever heard. The first time they let me out of there, just for a few hours, I went to the San Carlos group of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Carlos, California. And when the secretary wasn't looking, I stole the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not really proud of that either. And I certainly wasn't proud the day I had to go make restitution. So that goes to show you, you don't tell the sponsor everything. I stuck it under my raincoat and I got away with it and I took off. Went back and told her I had one of the three. I'd gotten a big book. She said, did you get a sponsor? I said, no, I didn't see anybody I liked. I wouldn't have that my kind of trouble in this group. There are people in here, I'd just absolutely twist your arm if you'd become my sponsor. Having said that, let me tell you, I've outlived three of them. I'm a sponsor killer, evidently. I will offer you the hope that all three of them died of old age. You know, and I love them all, and they've all left me a gift that's absolutely unbelievable in my life. Because I told you how desperate I was when I got here, and I'm not that desperate now. They were the difference. They were the difference. Juanita told me to find a home group. I did. They let me out the next weekend, and I went to a meeting in Foster City, California. If you know anything about the Bay Area, you know that that's clear out of town from San Mateo. I wasn't going to take any damn chance that anybody knew me. Anybody that I would have run across in an AA meeting, I didn't want to have them see me crawling back. Leave alone that little plastic band I had around my wrist that told everybody where I was from. Now, Foster City is 1.5 miles from San Mateo. You could walk it easily. And the meeting was on a Friday night at first. It was a great meeting. We were a little on the intense side. Some of us were still in institutions when we started there. A couple of them had just gotten out of San Quentin. They were intense. Quiet, too. Very quiet. They would sit in the back in that pre-Al-Anon stance, and they would have their stocking caps down to about here. And then they would glare at you, and that was their participation in the meeting. Very intense. We had one guy that gave a cornet concert for 20 minutes, put it back in the case, and never said a word and walked out, and that was his contribution. But it was my home group, damn it. And we read all the things that we were supposed to read, and we talked and 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 talked. We were really intense. And I went back and I told her that I'd gotten number two. That I got my home group. She was happy enough with that. She had never been in the group yet. And she said, "How about that sponsor?" I said, "No, I didn't really see anybody, you know, that was good enough." She said, "I'll give you 1 week." She turned into Hardball. Hardball. 1 week. I screwed up on the kiln or broke a coffee, did something terrible at the Nut House, and they restricted me that week. I couldn't get out. From Wednesday night to Wednesday night, I had been a bad boy, and I couldn't get out. I couldn't go get a sponsor, and they weren't exactly running up to that institution saying, "Sponsor for rent." So the next Wednesday happened, and when she asked that question, "Did you find a sponsor?" I was going to give her the saddest story she ever heard and say, "You know, I got restricted and I couldn't get out." She says, "Well, if you haven't got a sponsor, I'm it."
Oh.
Yeah. So I, God, there are people in here that know me.
Yeah.
Not you, Al. So then I had all three. I had a home group, I had a big book, and I had a sponsor. And then she did something really nasty. She came up on the weekends, and it wasn't her turn to come up there. And we started reading out of that big book together. And then, oh my God, she had that third step prayer, and she had to insist that we did it on our knees. Now, I told you, I'm a failed Methodist. I was sure that if I ever hit my knees again and said, "Oh God, here I am," he'd say, "Oh, there you are," and I'd get it in the neck. And we started work on the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, nobody told me the women work with the women, the men work with the men, because I don't think anybody else could have touched me the way she did. She was there during the 10-second attention span that I woke up. And I heard her message, and I saw that twinkle. Thank God I saw that twinkle. And I wanted it so desperately. And I worked those steps to the best of my ability for any guy who didn't have a God. She issued me hers, but it really wasn't the same. And I got to tell you this cockamamie story. It's so lame. I really hate to tell this part of the story. As if the rest of it isn't lame, right? One day she called me on the phone. This was after I'm out of the institution, so I've been sober a year. Didn't know that. Because I didn't know when my sobriety date was. Most of my friends had 2 years before I had to. She nudged me at a meeting. She said, "Hey, when's your sobriety date?" I said, "I don't know." She said, "Go back up to the hospital. They'll tell you." So I found out when my sobriety date was. I had already missed the first year. So my first cake was the second year. So I already had a year, and that, unbeknownst to me, was the prerequisite for joining the hospital and institution committee. Oh, God, there are some mistakes you can make. One of which is you never, ever, ever admit you own a pickup truck in an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sorry, but if nobody else tells you, let it be me. Don't do that. Don't ever get a sponsor who doesn't drive, because she's going to be a big mouth and speak everywhere, and you're going to be driving her in your pickup truck. And as a consequence, I sat in the front row of every speaker meeting in the Bay Area and mouthed her pitch. I can still do it. Do it better than she did. And I twinkle when I tell her story, too. when it comes time for that big-ass change in her life. And I didn't even know that I was standing at the threshold for that in my life. I didn't know. No, I didn't want to die anymore. She can't be way too busy to be able to figure anything out. No, if that's the same with you, if you're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings just because that bastard told you you had to, and he's been telling you that, and you've been going, and you've been doing the best you can, and all those still don't make any sense to you, you're in the right place. If you can't embrace those steps, one of two things are happening with you. And if you hang here in Alcoholics Anonymous, both of those things are going to end up just fine. The first thing is that you're absolutely baffled and you don't have any direction. That may mean that you've got the wrong sponsor. The second thing is that if you look at those steps and you're more afraid of those steps than you are of drinking, then you're with me and my crowd. Because that was the honest to God truth. I saw that honest look at myself, which is described as uncovering, discovering, and discarding. I love that phrase today. It scared the hell out of me when I first heard it. I first heard it from the guy who wrote it, Chuck C. Chuck C. changed my entire vision of Alcoholics Anonymous. One is he was a periodic alcoholic. He didn't start his pitch, "Hi, my name's Paul, I got 50 billion years," although he could have. He had a lot of sobriety. He was a periodic alcoholic, and he could understate almost anything. He could say the most sensitive thing in plain language. He could take religion as a whole and boil it down into where guys like me can understand it. And I felt finally like I belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous. Couldn't do them steps yet, but I felt like I finally belonged here. The next thing that happened to me, it says in the big book, sometimes it can come as a big boom, sometimes as a series of little ticks. For me, it was a big boom. Juanita called me one day and says, "Look, I'm supposed to speak for 10 minutes down at the Hatchery, be 10 at the penitentiary. I can't make it. You're going in my place." So I got in a pickup truck and I took another guy with me and I drove down there. And it was the occasion of the Roadsiders 25th anniversary. Roadsiders is an inside group. It's a real group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Card carrying, too, I might add. I have a card from them. And I delivered my little 10-minute pitch. Was simple, easy pitch. What time am I supposed to quit? Now? And I got the missing ingredient for Alcoholics Anonymous that day. I gave my little pitch, which was, "I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm just going to meetings and doing what I've been told." And I sat back down. It took me less than 10 minutes to say that. The main speaker was there on the occasion of their 25th anniversary, and he defined God as he understood it for me. He defined it as love. Now, I don't know about you, but in the Methodist Sunday School, there's 50 billion songs with just that in it, God is love. And it went from his lips to my heart. Thank you. My little duck heart. And I found a God that I can embrace in Alcoholics Anonymous, because the simple truth is, if you stand here or any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you can't see love, you've got your eyes closed. It happens at Denny's at 3 in the morning. It happens after the meeting. It happens out here at coffee. It happens when people drive down 40 miles just to hear somebody they haven't seen for a while. So if I haven't told you in my entire pitch, I've got to tell you this. I love you. You're the difference for me. I haven't wanted to die for a good long time. Next AA birthday, I'll celebrate here just like I did my last one. It's going to be 35 years. I haven't had to hurt that way. And I haven't had to drink. And I no longer fear that other shoe dropping. Now, if several of you will hold Terry at that door in the far end, I'll try to scoot out this door as fast as I can. Thank you.